In the Philosopher's Zone today, who's afraid of inequality?
The aspect of inequality that attracts moral attention is that I think there's a general sense that we are all in favor of equality. Liberty, equality, fraternity, or all men are created equal. It really strikes me very vividly that equality is not a very important parameter. What's really important is that everybody should have enough, not that everybody should have as much as everybody else.
Inequality, declared President Obama, is the defining challenge of our time. That might be true, but is it a moral challenge as well? Many think fair distribution to be self-evidently just. But could we be missing the point about where the moral principle properly lies? Renowned philosopher Harry Frankfurt certainly thinks so, and we'll hear why soon. But first, what exactly is inequality? Duncan Iverson is Professor of Political Philosophy at the University of Sydney. Duncan Iverson, welcome to the Philosopher's Zone.
Great to be here.
Now, you write that inequality is an incredibly important question of our times, but what sort of inequality?
I think there are two kinds of equality, at least, and inequality that philosophers think about. The first is a basic idea of equality, that human beings are all fundamentally equal in some way. Then there's a second kind of equality, and thus inequality, which is what you might call the inequality or the policy around equality and inequality. So the equality of resources or equality of opportunity or economic equality and inequality. So there are two ways that we tend to think of it, and the interesting question is how they relate to each other.
So what are the relevant questions to ask as a political philosopher? Where do you start?
Well, the first question you ask is, in what sense are we equal? And then probably the second question is, equality of what? Are we talking about equality of wealth, of opportunities, of liberties, or of life chances?
And what of the questions that would go towards justifying inequality?
The way that liberal political philosophers have tended to come at this question is, are there any circumstances in which inequalities are justified? And I think the way that certainly ever since the very important work of John Rawls, the American political philosopher who wrote a book called A Theory of Justice, Rawls argued that fundamentally people should be seen as free and equal, but in some circumstances, inequalities are justified if they're arranged so as to benefit the worst off. So his view was that you could have inequalities in society, not fundamental inequalities, so there couldn't be a caste society or hierarchical society, but there could be differentiations in wealth, but only if, for example, only if that was the only way of improving the situation of the worst off in that society.
Mm. He talks about the veil of ignorance, doesn't he?
Right. So his great, I think, idea and thought experiment was to get us to think about what would it mean to really think impartially about a just society, which for him is fundamentally an equal society. And his idea was, look, if you didn't know whether you were rich or poor, Catholic or Protestant, male or female, you didn't know about your natural talents, whether you were smart or not so smart, then what kind of principles would you want to govern what he called the basic structure of society? And the basic structure of society is those aspects of our society that make our lives go well or not. And he thought that the two principles we would land on was, first of all, a principle of equal basic liberty. None of us would not want to have equal basic liberties. And the second principle we would land on, more controversially, he called the difference principle, which is just that idea I mentioned a minute ago. That is to say, probably want to live in a society where if there were inequalities, they were only justified because they made the worst of our situation as best as it could be.
Hmm. So how does that play into the discussion now about inequality, particularly economic resource?
I think the big challenge we've got today is, remember I started with this distinction between fundamental equality and then economic equality or the policy of inequality. I think the big challenge today is the kinds of inequalities we're seeing, not just in Western societies, but I think China is the most unequal society today, the kind of inequalities we're seeing, the danger is those can leak back into the way we think about our fundamental equal standing vis-a-vis each other. There's a very powerful idea at the heart of, I think, Rawls's argument. We all share a fundamental equal standing vis-a-vis each other. We have to justify ourselves vis-a-vis each other. We have that sort of fundamental equal standing and respect that's owed to us. The danger today is if the economic inequalities that are emerging are so strong or creating such a gap between the rich and the poor, there's a leakage from that into the way we look at each other in that fundamental equal sense. If you go to work in a private chauffeured car, you send your kids to a private school, you live in a gated community, there's a sense in which you really find it increasingly difficult to look at your fellow citizens in the same way. If you're a young African-American male in the inner city of the United States, it's very hard to see how your life chances have the same opportunity to develop as someone living in that gated community in the private school. So I think political philosophers offer a really important way of thinking about the relationship between what we might call kind of democratic equality and economic equality. And the challenge we have today is that those two are becoming increasingly split. They're being sort of driven apart in many ways.
So far, we're talking about it as a question of political philosophy. But is it also a question for moral philosophy?
Absolutely. So that idea of basic equality is, I think, one of the profound moral challenges and questions we have today. It's something that I'm thinking a lot about. I think it's a really important issue because philosophers have tended to focus their attention on that second kind of question, that is the equality of what? Resources, opportunity, liberty. And that's generated extraordinary work. Dworkin, Rawls, Martha Nussbaum and others have written very important books on that topic. But what makes us fundamentally equal? You know, for someone like John Locke, the fact that we were God's workmanship, there was a kind of theological framework to the fundamental claim about human equality. Well, that's a much more controversial claim to make today, even though, of course, some people still find that an important justification. I actually think the moral question of fundamental equality is critical for us to be focusing on. And you see it emerge in really interesting ways, for example, in debates. You know, Peter Singer and his views about the relationship between higher sort of function animals and severely disabled children or babies. These are really critical questions, and they're, I think, really important for us to grapple with in new ways.
Mm. It seems that there's an overlay of the meritocracy on this, isn't there? Mm. In a sense that that plays into it, that that's the mechanism that allows people to say, well, that person's in the top 1% because they deserve to be there.
Right, great point. And here we can really draw on some of the work that people like John Rawls and others have done. So Rawls's idea was that none of us deserved our natural talents. It's a very radical idea. So the idea is that I don't deserve the fact that I had the aptitude and the opportunity to pursue a PhD in philosophy. That was something, to a certain extent, I was born into. So none of us deserve where we land in the social distribution of these native endowments, to use Rawls's language. So the whole point of a theory of justice is to compensate and mitigate for the impact of those advantages across the social order as a whole. But it's very difficult because our political culture is one in which the language of desert, the language of responsibility, is very powerful. And most, I think, liberal political philosophers, moral philosophers who work in that tradition actually have a real problem with thinking that you deserve the benefits of your natural endowment. So that's where we come back to Rawls's principle. The idea was, well, look, a brain surgeon deserves to be paid more than a philosopher because we need to make sure there are incentives for the brain surgeon to do brain surgery and the difficult training that requires. But Rawls said that's only justified because we need brain surgeons to ensure that the rest of us benefit from having that skills in our society. Now, having said that, the Canadian philosopher Jerry Cohen famously critiqued this argument, saying, look, you can't really have it both ways. You can't talk about an equal society and then allow people to have these vast differences in wealth. I mean, crystallized in a wonderful title of one of his books, If You're an Egalitarian, Why Are You So Rich? These are really, I think, challenging issues for not just philosophy, but for the culture, where, you know, we often think, well, hey, I deserve my place at the University of Sydney, or I deserve my place at the CEO of a bank. I've worked hard to get there. And what moral and political philosophers tend to do is think about, well, hang on, how, in fact, did you get there? And how do we think about that morally in terms of the opportunities and advantages you've had in that process?
Is it possible, though, that the question of where the moral principle lies or the moral gravity lies is not in just the fact of inequality? It's in fact something connected to it, and that is absolute poverty.
No, that's right. I don't know any, at least liberal political philosopher in the egalitarian tradition, who thinks that absolute poverty is justified. That's clear, and it's very hard to see how anyone could justify that. Famously, you know, Harry Frankfurt was someone who asked that question with great force. You know, what is wrong with a brain surgeon making more than a philosopher? I mean, what's the problem with that? I mean, at a certain point, you just think you're just the kind of jealous person. But What we know, and social science tells us this repeatedly, is that consistent, profound, entrenched inequality makes the lives of the worst off go much worse. We know they get worse health care, they have worse education. They, you know, if there's not a lot of social mobility, then that's a fundamental challenge to what I called earlier democratic equality, that idea of us sharing a fundamental equal standing. So although I think we can live with inequality, we need to make sure that it's a justified kind of inequality, and that ultimately, I think, has a moral framework to it. If the kinds of inequalities that exist in our society means that people's lives go much worse, then I think that's morally problematic. And a good theory of justice, a good theory of political equality, can help us think about why that's a problem.
Duncan Iverson from the University of Sydney, here on The Philosopher's Zone, today on inequality.
Trump lives here on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. His apartment is spread over the top three floors of Trump Tower, this 68-storey skyscraper, which is also home to campaign headquarters. Mr. Trump's neighbours include Tiffany's, Gucci, and Louis Vuitton. Everything about this part of New York just screams money.
So does it matter morally that some have a lot, a real lot, and others don't? Harry Frankfurt has built a reputation as a perceptive moral philosopher. Over the years, he's tackled the big ones: love, free will, even, excuse the term, bullshit. He's been thinking about inequality for three decades, and he's come to an interesting conclusion. Harry Frankfurt, welcome to the Philosopher's Zone.
Thank you.
I think probably what we should start with is this idea of what actually defines moral importance before we get onto the question of whether equality or inequality has a moral dimension to it. What actually defines or what makes something morally important?
Well, that's a very serious question. What can I say? I would say, I suppose, that what makes something morally important is that it has a serious beneficial or harmful effect on human life. If it has a seriously beneficial effect, then it's morally desirable, and if it has a seriously harmful effect, then it's morally undesirable. If it has no particular effect, I suppose it's morally neutral and of no particular moral concern.
Hmm. So the framing of this issue as a moral one, the question of inequality, in a popular sense, people would believe it to be a moral question. Is that right?
I suppose they do.
Hmm. But your understanding of inequality is that, in fact, we're missing the point, that it's not a question of morality.
I suppose that is what I'm saying. Inequality as such strikes me as morally indifferent. After all, you could achieve perfect equality by making everybody equally poor. That would satisfy the requirements of equality and avoid inequality, but it's not a very desirable outcome. So the inequality itself doesn't seem to me to catch on to the really important aspect of the situation. I think, you know, President Obama said recently in a State of the Union address that the most challenging issue of the current period of time, something like that anyway, he said the most challenging issue of the current period of time was inequality. And I think that's just mistaken. I think the much more challenging issue is poverty. What's important is not that people are unequal, but that some of them are poor. Some of them can't lead decent lives because they don't have enough to support the pursuit of a satisfying life.
So what is the feature then of inequality that we're not getting right in that regard? Because people at a popular level would link the two. They would link the fact that some people are poor because some people are rich.
That may be so. It may be that the rich exploit the poor in the sense that they prevent the poor from improving their positions. The aspect of inequality that attracts moral attention is that I think there's a general sense that we are all in favor of equality. Liberty, equality, fraternity, or all men are created equal, and so on. And it really strikes me very vividly that equality is not a very important parameter. What's really important is that everybody should have enough, not that everybody should have as much as everybody else. As long as the more affluent don't achieve their affluence at the expense of the less affluent, then I don't see really any basis for condemning or regretting the situation of some being more affluent than others.
But if one is achieving it at the expense of the other, and I guess in some economic arguments that is the case because there's a set amount of resource, some resources allocated by whatever mechanism, market mechanism, to some and not to others, so that there is a direct link, isn't there?
There is that link, yes. Certainly true. If, how shall I put it? You have a general, the gross domestic product of a country is all the wealth that's produced. If some people have a great deal and others have very little, there's something ugly about that situation, especially if it is assumed, which one need not assume, that those who have very little don't have enough. It's quite possible to have much less than others and still have enough for a very satisfying life.
So going back to your point that it's not about the equality or portions amongst people ratios, it's about an absolute concept of what it is to have enough. Is that right? Have I got the right end of that?
Yes, I think so. Another way of putting to grasp the point that you just brought up, equality and inequality are comparative features. They don't pertain to the absolute character of the situation. What's important is that people should have decent lives, not that they should have better lives than others or worse lives than others. What's important is, as I say, that everybody should have enough to lead the kind of life that it is reasonable for somebody to expect. And that's a matter of the intrinsic character of the life and not a matter of its relationship to other lives. Hmm. At the beginning of my book, I quote a little joke about two men meeting on the street, and one says to the other, "How are your children?" And the other man says, "Compared to what?" That's an example of the mistaken use of a comparative criterion rather than an absolute one.
And yet it's hard to get a sense of what the absolute might be in relation to what is enough. I imagine you could be criticized that enough could just be subsistence, couldn't it?
No, I wouldn't consider enough. I wouldn't consider subsistence to be enough. In my sense of the term, enough is enough to provide you with sufficient means to pursue reasonable expectations of a rich and satisfying life. Anything less than that is poverty. Being poor means not having the means to pursue that kind of life. It's to suffer the burdens and the inadequacies that poverty naturally entails. If we have enough, then it's difficult to quantify it precisely because it's not a matter of a metric of comparative measurements. It's a matter of the intrinsic character of the situation. One of the points I try to make in the book is that one of the unfortunate aspects of a concern with inequality is that it diverts people's attention from what it means to have enough. It's easy enough to see what it means to be unequal. That's merely an arithmetic calculation. What it means to have enough, what constitutes having enough, is a much more delicate, subtle, and difficult question. And our failure to pay attention to that question is partly because we're so concerned with equality, as if that's what we're after.
Mm. Because you say it actually leads to a moral shallowness, because it distracts us from this main problem of calculating what is right for us.
Yes, exactly. It's a question of each person deciding on the basis of his own sense of himself, his own talents, his own ambitions, his own qualities and characteristics, what is necessary for him to lead, given that he's that kind of a person in the circumstances in which he lives, what does it take for him to have enough to pursue a satisfying life under those conditions?
Hmm. It suggests some absolutes which aren't related to how those around you live. That's difficult, isn't it, in a society where I guess no one is an island, that what other people do does affect you, that the way that your society works, operates, runs, shows itself is going to somehow impact on you and what you think you might need for a flourishing life.
I'm happy to admit that to have enough is to have enough to satisfy your sense of equity, your sense of not having as much as the next person, but having however much he may have, that you have enough to pursue your own life.
Does that then work as a serious objection to what you're saying? For instance, you bring in the concept of respect. Respect obviously is something that's very important in moral terms. And if people feel unequal or lower down the rung, that perhaps they feel that they won't get the respect that's due to them.
If having less than others in the society means that you do not get the respect that's necessary for self-respect, then I agree that that is an important consideration. I have no quarrel with the claim that what other people have is important to me. It's not important to me because they may have more or less than I do. It's important to me only in the sense that I want to be respected. I want to be regarded by the members of the society as living the kind of life that that society admires and respects and regards as valuable. So it's not a matter of more or less. It's more a matter of a qualitative comparison rather than a quantitative one.
Mm. Another way that you attack this question is via the economic side of diminishing marginal returns. That, yes, you know, if the next ice cream is not going to be as good as the last one and there's going to be a point on that curve where it's not going to be very good at all. I think you make the point that money is a particular thing that's not quite the same as having the next ice cream or the next chocolate. It can enable you to get that, but money itself may not diminish on the curve.
Yes, money is different from many other valuable things in that it has it's generic in its capacity. It can buy anything. So it isn't limited to any particular item. If you run out of steam for one thing, if you've lost your taste for some kind of item, there's always something else that is valuable and that can satisfy you. So this generic quality that money has gives it a unique status among the things that we value.
So back to this idea of we should be worried about poverty as an absolute concept as opposed to egalitarianism, equality, fair distribution. You know, the individual may not necessarily be worried about his next door or her next door neighbour, but he's worried about the society at large. I think John Rawls makes the point, doesn't he? When there's people that you don't know anything about and you need to divide something amongst them, that your inclination, rational inclination, is to give them an equal amount of it.
You give them an equal amount of it only if you don't know anything about them. If you do know something about them, that enables you to distinguish among them and to discriminate among their needs and their desires and interests and capacities, then an equal distribution would be inappropriate. Fairness consists in giving each person his due, giving each person what is entitled to or what is appropriate for him to have. And equality is not by any means the obvious answer to how to arrange that.
Mm. Probably what confounds this issue and makes it even harder to deal with from a thoroughly analytic and isolated point of view is that the world appears to have become more unequal in the last 20 to 30 years. I think since you've first written those essays, the disparity between the rich and the poor has grown even greater, both
yes,
within Western countries and between the West and the rest of the world.
Well, you know, inequality has several objectionable characteristics. One is that if some people in the society have a great deal, have excessive affluence, and others are impoverished, and there's something ugly about that, that the valuable goods could be distributed in a way that would be much fairer, would have much greater moral benefit. But there are other aspects to inequality as well. Inequality gives people competitive advantages so that the rich have greater influence, social and political influence, than the poor. And that's something that needs to be controlled by appropriate legislative, regulatory, and judicial means. Otherwise, the constitutional ideals by which our society professes to be governed, those ideals are undermined by the excessive influence of some people in virtue of having more than others.
This does take me back to this question, then, that if that is the case, locating the moral value relates directly to fair distribution, which then relates back to equality.
I don't think fair distribution does relate back to equality. Fair distribution involves qualitative judgments about what each person is due. Equality is merely an arithmetic judgment about how you divide the pie so that everybody has the same share. The emphasis on inequality has a certain rhetorical power. It may facilitate efforts to relieve poverty, but it's not that inequality itself is doing much work there. It's not a reasonable moral ideal. The term may have, as I say, a certain rhetorical force so that we can motivate people to eliminate poverty by talking about the ugliness of inequality, but that's not a theoretical consideration. So I think that if everyone had enough, then the fact that some people had more than others would be of very little interest.
Harry Frankfurt on inequality. He's been writing about it for some time, and a new slim but to-the-point volume has just been released. More details on our webpage, where you can listen again, download, or go deep into the archive. Thanks today to Mudita Dias, Diane Dean and Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. I'm Joe Gelonesi. Hope to see you next week in The Zone.